powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Let's go!
This is Jake and Stacy.
Live from Seahawks Training Camp
on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports
Let's go,
app.
Curtis!
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Happy Thursday, you guys. You're listening to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps is here, obviously. I'm Stacy Ross. Curtis Rogers, producer on the board. We have a really exciting show for you guys today. Abraham Toro, man of the hour, going to join us in 30 minutes. Do not go anywhere. You want to hear from him. Before we get to that, though, we have to address a concern. We have to address a very real concern that I think some people are having, Jake. The Seahawks offense looked like a garbage can yesterday. Like an actual garbage can.
No, they didn't. Well, don't say that, because then the Astros would actually get really interested. Yeah. They would be like, what?
I'm sorry, what? Big pardon? No, it was a tough day. I mean, we're going to talk about it in just 1 second, but let's hear from Pete Carroll himself. Cut number four. This is what he had to say.
Today was a hard day for the offense. You know, we didn't handle the ball very well. We had some ball handling things that we didn't do well. So, I don't think this was a great day for us to improve. I think we got to come back and bounce back from this day.
You had a couple fumbles. One was from Alex Collins. I didn't see who had the other one, so I don't want to attribute it to Collins. You had Colby Parkinson, who couldn't corral in a pitch from Geno Smith on an option play. Russell Wilson and Ethan Posick had kind of a botched snap situation. You had a pick from Geno Smith and a pick from Russell Wilson, both intercepted, by the way, by the same guy, rookie free agent safety out of Arizona State, Curtis, bear down. I know it's upsetting, but he had a great day. He had a great day. Jake said a real candidate for the practice squad there with Ashari Crosswell. Before we talk about Crosswell, though, we need to talk about the offense, because that's really the concern people are going to have, Jake.
No, it is. And I understand that was a big highlight, because it was, quite frankly, yesterday was sloppy.
Well, the highlight of the day was a rookie free agent safety.
Well, I think that a lot of people forget the final drive of practice that Russell Wilson put together for the offense that I thought looked really, really, really good. And we'll get to that later. But for the most part, it was very sloppy. I mean, you had false starts. You had fumbles. It just did not look sharp. It did not look clean on the offensive side of the ball. And you hadn't relatively seen that from this group up to this point. And one practice isn't going to necessarily get me hot and bothered and get me overwhelmed and get me concerned. When you look at, Geno Smith pitching to Colby Parkinson on an option play. Like, okay. Like, those aren't the guys that you're going to be seeing do that on Sunday in particular. Alex Collins needs to take better care of the football. No doubt about that. Those are the things that drive you insane as coaches. If you're Pete Carroll, obviously, Shane Waldron, protect the ball. That's rule number one. So it's really going to be about how they bounce back tomorrow when they get back out of the VMAC, and I know that the offense is going to be chomping at the bit to do that, but I think that when you're looking at as a whole, it wasn't, I don't view what the offense did yesterday and just say, man, this was a disaster of a day, because when you isolate it to the first team group, I actually thought that they got some good quality work in. There's just a lot of sloppiness overall that you can't have in this league, and you can't have when you're a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron. You've got to demand better, and he obviously will and is demanding more.
Yeah, if you're looking for any kind of silver lining, it's that not all the sloppiness was from first team guys, right? It's guys are getting a lot of reps during this time of the year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if in the first preseason game you see way more Rashad Penny than you do Carson, or way more of a guy like John Ursua than you do Metcalf or whatever. Those guys are getting like almost an equal number of reps in camp as starters. Mm-hmm. You saw Penny a lot. He's actually looked pretty good in camp so far. But I am no more concerned after yesterday than I am in general for the course of the season. I think that some sloppiness, some kind of jarred play is to be expected when this offense is rolling out a new playbook, when you've got not only a new offensive coordinator, but an offensive coordinator who's a first-time play caller. I think the single bad day doesn't bother me,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't alter my own perception, which is that it will take a couple weeks into the regular season for this offense to smooth things out. I do not think this is an offense that's going to hit the ground week one going all cylinders. And maybe I'll be wrong. I would love to be able to be wrong because they don't have the margin for error that they had last year. There is no easy schedule in the second half of the year. There
right.
is no, you know, gimme games to start out the first couple weeks. Yeah, we're talking about Jacob Eason maybe starting for Indy, and they don't have, you know, their starting guard who's one of the best in the league. So maybe you have an easier go of it there. They don't have Tennessee doesn't have a great defense for all the weapons they have on offense, but it's not going to be easy. Already by week 4 and 5, you're facing potential playoff teams. So
right.
they don't have all the time in the world to get this figured out. My perception has always been it will take them a while.
Now, I agree with you that I don't think that they'll be hitting all cylinders from the get-go in terms of week one, but I don't think that they are going to be stagnant. I don't think that this is going to be a retread of 2018, that they are, as an offense, they are going to struggle mightily, and you're like, what? Where is this team's identity? Who are they going to be?
Mm-hmm. They started out like pass heavy against Denver,
right.
and then by like week 3 or 4 kind of turned to the run?
Yeah, exactly, with Brian Schottenheimer, and they got away from, honestly, what Pete Carroll hired him to do. I mean, like, Shoddy, I hired you to run the football and to reestablish the run game and to play action off of that. We're getting pass heavy. Doug Baldwin's out, and we got Brandon Marshall as our leading receiver. You're not heading into the year like that in that situation. I believe that they'll be just fine, but they'll really find their groove in as the weeks come along. It's not one practice that we're looking at and reacting to and saying, oh man, this is what we're thinking and this is a bigger issue for us. We understand that it's one isolated practice. We understand that these fumbles are things that will get cleaned up and that they're going to get addressed. It's just that sometimes that's the way this thing works, right? It practices, defense will be sloppy, defense will look great the other day, and vice versa. But more so than anything else, I believe that when you're looking at this offense, you're looking at Russell Wilson, you're looking at Shane Waldron, it's about how they continue to keep growing together. How does DK Metcalf, how does everybody else come together? Because you did mention, and I think you nailed it, in terms of the margin for error this year is razor thin. It already is in this league, but you're going into a season where, gosh, 10 games, at least 10 games, if you just look at the schedule, are teams that are legitimate playoff caliber team.
And let's be real, there will inevitably be a team that the Seahawks have every reason to beat that will beat them.
Yes.
Like, without a doubt, there will be last year's New York Giants.
There will be. And the thing that I go to that I really like hearing from Shane Waldron, though, is cut number 8. He talks about how, look, we don't want to hit a spot of being stagnant like we did last year as an offense, and he believes that they'll be able to avoid that for one particular reason.
Yeah, I think there's always a constant evolution of an offense that goes on throughout a season, and really that's based around the players, you know, and in the NFL, it's a player's game, so depending on what players are playing well, different points, hey, what can they do, different ways you can utilize guys, different strengths and different skill sets as the season goes on. I think it's important to keep a pulse around the league, around different aspects of college football. If there's things that fit, you know, we know it's a copycat league, it's football is a copycat game in general, but it also has to fit within the system that you're running, and you have to have the people that have the ability to execute those different things.
So basically what he's saying is that as we go along the season, we have to continue to keep adapting and highlighting the strengths of our players and the talent that they have. That will help us continue to shape and mold this offense week in and week out, where we'll be able to stay one step ahead of defenses and how they react and how they combat what we're doing on a week-to-week basis. So overall, I believe that this group is going to continue to keep finding their way. There's going to be bumps in the road. There's no doubt. You've got a first-time play caller. You've got a new offense that's being implemented here right now. But when you have Russell Wilson, you have Tyler Lockett, you have DK Metcalf, Chris Carson, this is a veteran heavy offensive group. They're going to be mature enough to handle this, and I don't think it's going to be something that we're going to be looking at the first 2 weeks of the season and scratching our head and going, man, I just can't see how this group is going to come together or how this group is going to eventually find the identity of who they really are. I think they know who they are, what they want to be. They're working out the kinks of the system and the offense and how they're putting it all together and getting on the same page.
I will say this. I am waiting for some fireworks in general at camp. And I'm being hypocritical about it because I'll tell you guys what. If every day DK Metcalf had five touchdowns or there was some like fifth receiver on the roster that was playing out of his mind looking like Jerry Rice or Randy Moss, I'd be like, guys, don't read into it. It's training camp. So I know I'm being a huge hypocrite about
this. That's
how
it was in 2019.
I know, but I am being very honest about just if you're not out there and you're not seeing it, there aren't a ton of fireworks. There's short passing. There's figuring stuff out. And look, it's training camp. Shane Waldron isn't going to unveil his entire playbook. First of all, they wouldn't be able to perfect the playbook by now anyways, but he's not going to roll everything out and be like, hey guys, watch this. This is everything we're planning to do, right? So like, it's to be expected, but I think that we have been talking about the addition of Shane Waldron and how important that's going to be. And I wish that I would have seen more by now, to be totally honest.
Right. But here's the deal, though. When you're talking about this offense and where they're changing, they know what the bread and butter is. The bread and butter is taking shots down the field and attacking downfield. What is the thing that they are trying to change and adapt? And that is developing their short to intermediate pass game. That is the thing that needs the work the most. It doesn't mean that the other stuff gets neglected. We've seen them do that from time to time in practice and be successful with it. But this is a West Coast-based offense. This is an offense it has all the deep elements to it. So I want to be very clear to everybody. But a big portion of this offense and the mentality is we are going to let the players get the ball out of your quarterback's hands, get it in the hands of your playmakers, and let them get you the yards after catch. Let them create the big plays in the big moments from a crossing route, or a shallow cross, or a basic, or a choice route underneath. Those are when the good things are going to happen, and we need to distribute to our playmakers. And that's why, as I'm watching practice, you might not see all the fireworks going on, but there is a lot of good work that's happening between Russell Wilson and Tyler Lockett, between him and DK Metcalf, them hitting routes in the seam, Tyler Lockett doing a great job in the choice route game, and Russell Wilson finding Gerald Everett quite a few times. So I think that overall, I look at what they're doing on offense, it's just a steady progress that they're getting towards, and it will come together. And I'm not trying to convince people that it will. It's just I think that what we've been accustomed to is run deep play action shots. This offense is taking a different form, and they're working through all that.
Final 10-second thought. I think the one thing I do want to see that you can see in camp is just that intermediate passing just be a little quicker. It feel a little more fast-paced. And so I hope that by the end of camp, and you and I have been doing post-practice videos, I will say when the pass feels like it's just like when the offense feels like it's even more fast paced. You know what I mean? Like that's something that I hope by late August, after we get through a couple preseason games and you and I do that 1 minute recap, I'm able to say, you know what? We talked about wanting to see an even quicker passing game when you're doing those quick routes and little handoffs. I think we saw that today. Like that's the post-practice video I hope that I'm able to do by the end of August. All right. Right now, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacy.
Headline number one, after dropping their series finale to the Rays yesterday, the Mariners take on a Yankees team hit hard by COVID. What is the real headline?
The Yankees have a shot at a wild card this year, which is also the only shot they're not avoiding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I will say, I know vaccinated players can get COVID, but it needs to work with a joke, you guys. Think about joke over actual content and truth. That's what I go for.
Landing the punchline, the most important thing.
Yeah.
As Curtis says, it's all about the clout.
All about the clout. That's exactly what it is.
Look, this is a great opportunity for the Mariners. I mean, this is a daunting, when you looked at the schedule, it is a daunting schedule. The Tampa Bay Rays, followed by the Yankees. That's a tough road schedule there, and you've got four games with the Yankees who have just bolstered up their lineup. I mean, it's absolutely absurd, but now you're going into this game where you're not going to see Gerrit Cole, the terrible mob boss of Gerrit Cole. You're not going to see Montgomery, so you're not going to see some of their best pitching, and it's up to the Mariners to try and take advantage of that. We'll see if they can do that in New York, but if they could come out of this series and split, wow, that would be a huge win for these guys.
It's so funny because we were talking about the Mariners after that Yankee series they had, ending with a phenomenal outing by Logan Gilbert. We were talking about, hey, this next series they're going to have against the Yankees, it's a four-game series in early August. This team's record isn't substantially different than it was as far as games above 500, and yet the team feels further much on the outside looking in.
I would say that I would agree with that because everybody else is catching up, right? You look at where they're currently at, they're tied right now in the wild card chase in terms of three games behind. And you just look at Toronto, you just look at the Yankees, you look at, obviously Tampa Bay is ahead of that, but you look at these other teams, you just feel like they've got more firepower. And can this Mariners group continue to keep hanging in there? And they have all the way through this thing thus far. I hope it continues. I mean, it would be a really positive development if they stayed in this thing and were very competitive all the way through. But come back to it. I hate pointing to this because I think it's changed since June, July. But you look at their overall run differential, one of these is not the same. The Yankees, two games back with a plus 13 run differential. The Toronto Blue Jays, three games back with 111 run differential, plus run differential. The Seattle Mariners, minus 49. So I hope they can keep it up, and I hope they can stay with it, but odds are against them for sure.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, recently retired quarterback Philip Rivers would reportedly consider joining a quarterback-needy team late in the season. What is the real headline?
Look, when you got nine kids, you really can't afford to take a day off. That's the actual headline. It's you got a lot of kids. Philip Rivers got a taste of retirement and was like, you know what?
It's a lot of college to pay for.
It's a lot of college to pay for. But you know what's interesting about this is the idea that it's later in the season. We were talking about this, Curtis. Like, so are you joining? If there's a quarterback needy team, you are joining later in the season. It is either a team that has been bad because they don't have a quarterback, and why would you join that team if not just for the paycheck because you're not taking them to the playoffs? Or it's going to be a team that's really good that has a random thing happen. You know what I mean? It's going to have to be like, they would go with Henny, but Chiefs week 14 lose Pat Mahomes.
Right. It's funny to me that Philip Rivers is putting himself in this situation. Look, I thought last year he did a good job for the Colts, but look, you're on the last legs. And I think that there's other guys out there that might give you a boost. I mean, look at what Haneke did for you out of nowhere with the Washington football team and gets himself a new contract, a new deal. But Philip Rivers, you give those two scenarios, and they asked him further for clarifying questions. I think it was Chris Mortensen who reached out to clarify for Philip Rivers that what exactly he's looking for. It's only a playoff team. So if a playoff team, they get into week 17 and they lose their guy and they're going to be in the playoffs, Philip Rivers will be interested in that situation. And it's not a bad situation to jump into for 1 or 2 weeks.
Headline rewrites.
Tonight, there's actual football. The Cowboys and Steelers face off in the NFL's Hall of Fame game. What is the real headline?
Also known as the league's annual test of just how addicted you are to football, comma, you sickos. You have a problem. If you are tuning into this game, you have an addiction and you need help.
Oh, come on.
No. Go spend time with your family.
Go spend time with your family. Get outside.
Your kids want to play with you.
Walk away from the Hall of Fame game between the Cowboys and Steelers.
You're going to be watching fourth stringers.
That's exactly going what at this it. Is. If you're no watching thanks. This, you have a problem. It's okay. We all do. But you have a problem. You need to seek help.
I resent this because I feel like you both are ganging up on me and attacking.
It is what it is. Look, okay. This is actually...
I am excited.
This
is a newborn within the last week.
You have a newborn baby at home and you're
watching... I can't
wait
to see it. It's the pageantry of it. It really has nothing to do with the game itself.
You know what
it's
addicts do? They make excuses.
It's the signing. It's the feeling that football is back. We are here. NFL is back.
Jake, you're hurting those and those around. Or you're hurting yourself and those around you.
This is a game that means nothing that will be played primarily by players that probably won't make this roster.
The preseason means nothing. But are you going to be tuning in when the Seahawks play?
No, I'm going to be watching. Oh, well, yeah, I'll be watching when the Seahawks play.
Okay, there you go.
Because we have to talk about it. I'm not watching this game.
The funny thing about this Cowboys-Steelers game is that nobody of significance is going to be playing in this. Like, the first stringers, for the most part, are going to be...
Yeah, the Cowboys...
They're not even going to be a part of this.
The Cowboys tweeted out their list of players who wouldn't even be traveling to
yes,
this game. And it was
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
It was every first stringer.
What a joke.
What's even like the third string Cowboys quarterback right now?
All right, but you know what? I was one of those guys that was trying to make a roster that was just scraping for every single opportunity that was given. So hats off to those guys, because the Dallas Cowboys, you're going to get a whole bunch of them. You're going to get an entire game of reps. What a cool, amazing moment that is. And honestly, for the preseason, that's more of what I get excited about, is watching those guys. I know it's not the fun part of it for the majority of the NFL, but I really enjoy seeing guys get their shot, get their opportunity, and seeing if there's any star that's born out of the preseason.
I just need you to know, Jake, that you will be spending 3 hours of your life watching Ben DiNucci throw to Jeremy Sprinkle.
Ben DiNucci!
I can't do that. I
Ben DiNucci.
I might walk away during that time. But, maybe when the other quarterbacks are in, I can deal with that.
All right. It's been just over a week since Jerry DePoto made a controversial trade with Houston, sending Kendall Graveman to the Astros for infielder Abraham Toro. Since coming to Seattle, Toro's batting .429 with 3 home runs in 8 games. Quite the whirlwind week. And you can hear about it from Abraham himself, because the newest Mariner joins us next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey,
live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Well, we go to the top of the fourth inning. Mariners of the Rays all tied at 1-1. Abraham Toro will lead it off with a swing and a drive deep to right field. Back she goes, going and going, and goodbye baseball. Abraham Toro with a leadoff home run. Here in the top of the fourth inning, holy smokes, his 9th home run of the season.
It's been a whirlwind week for new Mariners infielder Abraham Toro. The 24-year-old was acquired in a trade by the Seattle Mariners from the Houston Astros. And Jake, there are a few times when I've seen a trade like that happen in the middle of a series against a divisional opponent, especially after the first game, which was so heated and had so much emotion. And then before you know it, Abraham Toro coming to the other dugout as part of that team. So joining us right now is Mariners infielder Abraham Toro. Abraham, how are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm good. Now, do you go by Abraham or Abe, just so we know?
Usually Abraham. That's fine with me.
Okay. So I'll start with this one. Trades must always be kind of jarring, and we were just talking about this. What was that feeling being traded mid-series?
Honestly, it was a little bit surprising. It's something that I knew the possibility was there, but when it happens, you always, don't know how to react. But, I took it very good. The guys welcomed me, and it helped. It's a really young team, and a lot of the guys I play against in the minors, so it's an easy transaction.
Abraham, since you've been here, you've been on an absolute tear at the plate and have contributed in a big way to this team. How good does that feel for you to get this fresh start and to be able to kick it off with the success that you've had?
Oh, like you said, it feels good, I've just been working on some things mechanically, and also my timing. I feel like it's been a lot better, so that's been the major key of the success.
Have there been any Mariners players that have kind of taken it upon themselves to help you kind of make, get familiar with the clubhouse and the game? Like, has anyone approached you to kind of help you adjust?
Yeah, J.P. Crawford being a shortstop, and me, learning the second base position, he's been helping me a lot with, a lot of the positioning and, turn double plays. And also Seager, he's been doing this for a while. And it's somebody that, I like to watch his routine and how he go about his business. So those two guys have been, just in a couple days, I've been learning a lot from them.
Abraham, you're very accomplished. You speak 3 languages fluently. And it's pretty incredible to look back at your life experience so far. But what is it like to go from living in Montreal to the States and going through minor league ball and all of that to where you are at this point?
Growing up in, Canada being a hockey country. So I was, one of the few guys that played baseball, and going to the U.S., you kind of see the competition getting better, but it's all about adjustment. And I feel like I could adjust very quick, and that's what made me, go up every level every year.
Did I read right that you played a whole bunch of stuff? You played baseball, soccer, and then I see also volleyball on there. Is that correct?
Yeah, but it was indoor volleyball. Yeah, I did.
Okay, that's awesome. What did you play in volleyball? Were you setter, spiker? Where what were you?
I was really young, so it's just just you kind of play every position. So I didn't have like a fixed, you know, thing. So I just kind of do it all.
Gotcha. That's awesome.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy. We're speaking with Mariners infielder Abraham Toro. Abraham, we talked with Scott Servais yesterday, and we were obviously asking him about you because you're new to the team. And he said, you know, you're so great. He's loved having you on so far. And then he also said, you know, he speaks three languages, but kind of a low-key, quiet guy. So, Abraham, I have to know if you do what I do, which is when you actually just don't want to talk to people and you put headphones on, but there's nothing playing in the headphones. Is that your move, or do you just kind of walk away from people instead of talking to them?
No, I mean, it's just who I am. It's not that I don't want to talk to people. It's just, you know, I'm more quiet, but I'm always, you know, want to learn. So like I said, when I see guys that, you know, maybe they're doing a drill that I like or something, that I always go to them because I always want to, you know, get better. So it's just my personality.
Just low-key.
Abraham, I am always fascinated by the stories of switch hitters. For me, I was a switch hitter when I played, but the reason why I was a right-hander, and then I watched Ken Griffey Jr., and he was like my favorite player, so then I switched to be a lefty. What's your story there? Why did you end up, or how did you end up becoming a switch hitter?
So it's actually a great story. So I was been a righty, natural righty, but I always had that good lefty swing, and I would just mess around, play with it. And then when I was 16 years old, we were just doing front toss from the left side and with my high school team, and the coach said whoever hits it the furthest, he's not going to pick the ball. And I was hitting home runs, and he was like, hey, you want to, you know, just practice that full time? And I said, sure. Just like, you know, I didn't think anything of it, and ever since I didn't stop, and now, you know, I'm a full-time switch hitter.
Wow,
so switch hitter since you were 16?
Full-time, I would say, yeah, full-time 16, yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. Now, obviously, you look at where the Mariners are, and they're in a different spot than Houston, but they are a team that's rebuilding, that's you know, focusing on looking ahead to potentially 2022. What's it like being, you know, with a team that's kind of in a different place, with a team that's gearing up toward a rebuild and toward looking to the future, and a very young team?
Well, we're not necessarily looking for next year. You know, we're still close to that wild card spot for this year. So, I mean, we're only a couple games behind. So, like, you know, if we can play some good baseball, I feel like we can, you know, get that second wild card spot.
You know, Abraham, what is it like to be in a locker room with all these young guys around? I mean, you look at where you were with the Houston Astros. At this point, they were very established into who they are, their culture, and what they were doing, and some superstars there. Here with the Mariners, you obviously have really good talent, good players, but very young. What's it been like to switch into that locker room or that clubhouse?
Well, I'm glad that I could see both. Like you said, you know, the veteran guys that have more experience, you know, you can see how they go. And then also you have the young guys here that, you know, they're just hungry. They want to make a name for themselves in the league. So, you know, just being able to see both, it's, you know, it's something that I like, because I can, you know, can relate with, you know, being the young guy, but also, you know, having being with a veteran team. So it's something that maybe I can pass the knowledge to the other guys.
Now, Abraham, you grew up in Montreal, but you're in Seattle now. So we were talking about it before having you on. Are you more of a Tim Hortons guy, which is the big coffee chain up there, or are you switching to Starbucks here?
Well, I do like my Tim Hortons, but I like Starbucks. But honestly, I'd rather do my coffee at home. So I'd rather make my coffee at home than drink one of those two.
There you go. That's the way to do it.
Nice. Yeah. Abraham, also, we were also wondering and kind of joking about the fact that you speak three different languages. Has there ever been a situation where you're around somebody who's talking in, you know, French, for example, and they're saying something, and maybe they're saying something that they don't want you to hear?
Yeah,
do you surprise them and jump in conversation with other people sometimes?
It did happen in Florida, because in Florida they have a lot of, you know, the French Canadian, they like to go there for the winter. So, So, you know, sometimes I was speaking just French over the phone, and someone's like, hey, how do you speak French? Like, because just by the look, I don't look really Canadian, so they're, you know, kind of surprised. So that's always funny.
That's what I would do. I would do that regularly. But yeah. Unfortunately, I failed French, so I can't partake. So, sorry about that.
Abraham, have you had much time around Seattle at all? I mean, you've been pretty much go-go from the moment you've gotten here. Have they tried to help settle you in, or, hey, this is the plan in terms of what we're going to do with apartments and all that kind of stuff?
Not yet. So, when I got traded, it was the last thing. Then we left for a road trip, and we haven't came back since, but so we haven't really, you know, have time to really visit Seattle. But, you know, so far I'm getting my apartment set up. It's not yet done, but when we go back, I feel like it's going to be all ready to go.
All right. He is Mariners infielder Abraham Toro. Abraham, have fun in the series. We'll be watching. And thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks to you guys.
All right. People giving me a hard time for asking about Starbucks. They said, never forget. I know. I thought about it before I said it. And then I went for it anyway. One popular football website ranked the top defensive lines heading into the season, and the Seahawks fans were very surprised by where their team ended up. We'll tell you about that ranking next. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Live from the sidelines at Seahawks training camp.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Now here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Jake, something yesterday made you real mad, really upset. And it happened, it was an article posted after we left training camp practice. Our training camp coverage, by the way, presented by Precor Home Fitness. And it was a Pro Football Focus ranking of defensive lines during the preseason. So it's their ranking of looking at just the talent you have on your roster, what you're entering the season with. Where did the Seahawks come in, 1 through 32?
Oh, they came in at a whopping 29th.
It's not 30th.
29th?
Could be worse.
I mean, this is the stuff that, like, Pro Football Focus, like, you had a great product. When you came out initially, the idea of having grades and having stats backed up to your overall grades of players was a really good concept and a really good idea. And I think there are some good reference points in terms of Pro Football Focus, but it absolutely has to be taken with a grain of salt. And this type of article is one of them. I mean, you're telling me that the Raiders have a better defensive line group than the Seattle Seahawks?
I'm
right
going to tell you right now.
Like, what?
I think 29.
What are we talking about?
I think 29 is low. I think above 15 preseason would also be generous.
I think I would agree with that. But how does a team that added to this group with a player in Kerry Hyder Jr. who had 10.5 sacks last year with the 49ers?
Just last year.
Yeah, but he had it last year.
I know, but I'm looking at what Pro Football Focus.
What other additions? What did the Raiders add? They didn't add anything that was better than 10.5 sacks from Kerry Hyder Jr. They didn't add somebody with the upside of Alden Smith. You're not getting Daryl Taylor back, who was a second-round pick who has a ton of upside.
Yeah, but they have no idea what they have in Daryl Taylor. No one writing this article has seen Daryl Taylor play a single snap.
I agree, but I'm saying that compared to some of these other teams that are in this ranking,
21 through
yes,
whatever.
There are not really any serious upside picks. I scoured through this. I looked through this. And you're talking about Carlos Dunlap, who has been very consistent in this league as your leading pass rusher. Benson Mayoa just came off of one of his better seasons, and now back-to-back years where he's posted around 6-7 sacks on the year. That is some consistent production that you're starting to have. I'm not saying that the Seahawks defensive line group is out of this world, but what I'm saying is that they should be commanding a lot more respect than 29th in the NFL. This is freaking ridiculous. And I think that when it's all said and done, when you have a team like this, I believe that they will be a around middle of the road to a top 10 pass rushing unit.
Top 10?
Yes, they showed that they have the ability to do so. They are versatile across the board. When you add Bobby Wagner to the mix, when you add Jamal Adams and his 9.5 sacks or his ability to create havoc, you add Marquise Blair to the mix of it. He is also a very productive player, a very talented player. I shouldn't say productive because that's not the right word to describe Marquise in his career thus far, but a very talented player who has the ability to be a great blitzer in this league. I think that they've got a lot more going
for them as an
overall. But
look at just the defensive line. I think another thing that Pro Football Focus is looking at is you lost Jaron Reed. And yes, the second half of last season was fantastic. You finished seventh overall in sacks with 46 sacks a year after you had just 29, which was something like 30th or 31st in the league. You were horrible with your pass rush in 2019 and essentially hadn't been able to replicate the success you had with Frank Clark and then Jaron Reed in his best season. And in addition to that, you had a great second half of the season, but you lost Jaron Reed and you brought in a guy like Al Woods, some older veterans, and maybe you end up having all of those guys that contribute to a great rotation. I'll tell you guys right now, I'm at Seahawks training camp. You know who looks great on that defensive line? Carlos Dunlap. First of all, he's gigantic. And secondly, he looks completely in shape and
you
he's
can't
out
get
there
over
having
how
fun.
Big he is.
I can't. He is a huge human. He's out there having fun. He's dancing. He's singing. He's a guy who's confident out there, and you can see it when he's out there. And there are
he's been in this league for 10
exactly.
years.
So
he's one of the more productive defensive ends in
exactly.
this league.
But I do not blame, especially an outside organization or website, for looking at what the Seahawks have on their defensive line with guys that are either older or only have one or two great seasons and saying this will not be enough, especially since the most production the defensive line has had in years, essentially since getting rid of Frank Clark, came in the second half of last season against teams like Philadelphia and Carson Wentz, who was the worst quarterback in football last year, against, you know, Washington, against teams that were pretty abysmal on offense.
I would agree with all counts that you just made. I think that's a fair argument, but I would counter that with the fact that they added Kerry Hyder Jr. They added Alden Smith. They are adding to their edge rush. Their edge rushing unit is remarkably better than where they were a year ago. Remarkably better.
And to start the season, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
To start the season, absolutely. And they will be a better unit overall than where they were last year. The one area that I will absolutely give to you is Jaron Reed, his absence. I mean, he had 6.5 sacks last year. So whatever the frustration that you had with him and his production in between 2019 and in 2020, I understand. But at the same time, this is a guy that was very productive on the interior of your defensive line. That will be missed, and you're going to have to try to replace that with Puna Ford and Robert Kimdichi, LJ Collier. Like, that's not something that I love to see, but they've got enough unique edge rushers that they can move them across the defensive line. We've seen that. We've seen Alden Smith line up as a defensive tackle. We've seen Kerry Hyder Jr.
You
do that.
You watch one-on-ones where a couple guys look good?
Absolutely. This group will be better, and ranking them 29th, I think, is flat-out ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
What I think happened is probably they got to 20 and thought, 20 through 30 are kind of interchangeable, and then there's very obvious, like, horrific ones that should be 31 and 32, but I'm guessing that they would have been fine putting the Seahawks at 29 or 25.
So they punished them for the first half of the season, and they failed to recognize
and
the second half of the season when they were one of the best pass rushing units in all of the NFL. And they get better from a talent acquisition, a player acquisition standpoint, and somehow they're going to be worse. It makes sense.
I think Seattle absolutely has an opportunity to pleasantly surprise people. Like, I am completely willing to admit that I could be dead wrong about this offensive line, and I would be fine with that. I would happily accept that. I think that they will probably be middle of the road, as it's more likely that than be a top 10 pass rush unit, but I'd love to be wrong.
I just think when you add Bobby Wagner, from a defensive line perspective, I agree. You don't have one blue chip player, right? Like, when I say that, I mean, like, truly elite level player, tops in the league. You're willing to pay him big time money down the road if you're not paying him already because he's that good. You don't have a player like that, but they have really good above average depth that they haven't had in quite some time that I think is going to pay off dividends for them. You add in Bobby Wagner, you add in Jamal Adams, you add in Marquise Blair, who is not part of the defensive line group, but it will help make that group more productive.
Someone texting in, is Stacey dating someone at Pro Football Focus? Nah, I just might have opinions that you don't agree with. Deal with it.
No, I think that we can have a difference of agreement in terms of, I think that you look at the overall
I'm looking at what Pro
aspect.
Football Focus is probably seeing. I'm looking at what they are probably seeing when they look at it, not necessarily everything that I've seen at camp.
Yeah, man, I get the 253, Jake, do you think you're being a homer? No, I don't. I think that when you're looking at this group, they are significantly more improved than a year ago. That is a fact. It's not even close.
Really quick here, Jake. I want to let you sound off on this for just 1 minute here. From Adam Schefter, former Seahawks veteran linebacker KJ Wright is in Las Vegas to meet with the Raiders per source. It's a familiar scheme with former Seahawks defensive coordinator Gus Bradley. Remember, he's there now being the Raiders DC.
Yep. It makes a lot of sense.
Is this the end of KJ to Seattle?
It could be. It could be. I mean, honestly, I think that at this point it was going to be hard to see KJ back in a Seahawks uniform, just to be purely honest with everyone out there. I think it would have taken an injury or Daryl Taylor to just flat out be out of his skull in terms of, you know, not even being able to handle the responsibilities of what a Sam linebacker is supposed to do in coverage. They wanted to get younger. They have a ton of talent, as I said, on the edge. They need to find a way to get Daryl Taylor on the field, and I think this is the way that they can best do it. But if he goes to the Raiders, I'll be really happy for him because this is one of those scheme fits that I thought worked out for him perfectly.
I'd love to see him go somewhere. I can't believe he's still unsigned. All right, Jake and I were out at Seahawks training camp yesterday, and each of us have three things we've got to tell you about, three things you need to know. We'll tell you what caught our eye next.